9. Deadly wine. No growth of moor or coppice, no heather flower or vine, but bloomless buds of poppies, green grapes of Proserpine. Pale beds of blowing rushes, where no leaf blooms or blushes, save this whereout she crushes, for dead men deadly wine. Algernon Charles Swinburne, The Garden of Proserpine. Cordelia and Matthew went only a short way down the alley before a door rose up in front of them. It shimmered in the side of a worn-looking wall, and Cordelia suspected that to mundanes the opening would not be visible at all. Inside was a narrow hallway, whose walls were heavy red cloth tapestries hanging from ceiling to floor, obscuring whatever was behind them. At the end of the hall was another door, also painted red. "When this place is not home to the salon, it is a gaming house," Matthew whispered to Cordelia as they approached the door. "There is even a trapdoor in the roof, so that if they get raided by the police, the gamesters can escape over the eaves." The door was flung suddenly open. Lounging in the space it revealed was a tall man in an iron grey jacket and trousers. In the dimness, his hair appeared utterly white. Cordelia thought he must be in his 60s at least, but as they approached, she realised his face was young and sharp, his eyes dark purple. This must be Malcolm Fade, High Warlock of London. Most warlocks had a mark that set them apart, a physical sign of their demon blood, blue skin, horns, claws made of stone. Malcolm's eyes were certainly an unearthly shade, like amethysts. "Three of you this time," he said to Anna. She nodded. "Three." "We try to limit the number of shadow hunters in the salon," said Malcolm. "I prefer Nephilim to feel outnumbered among downworlders, as it is so often the other way around." A woman's voice called from behind him. Malcolm didn't turn but smiled. "You do enliven the place, though, as Hypatia reminds me." He thrust the door wide and stood aside to allow them to enter. "Come in. Are you armed?" "Never mind, of course you are. You're shadow hunters." Anna passed through the doorway, and then Matthew, Cordelia last. As she stepped by Malcolm, he peered down into her face. "There's no Blackthorn blood in your family, is there?" he asked suddenly.
"No, none, I don't think," said Cordelia, surprised.
"Good." He ushered them past. Inside, the salon was a series of interconnected rooms, decorated in blazing dual tones of red and green, blue and gold. They moved down a bronze-painted corridor and into an octagonal room full of downworlders. Chatter and laughter rose about them like a tide. Cordelia felt her heart flutter a bit. There was something about this night that felt dangerous, and not because she was in a room full of downworlders. The fact that none of them were making any attempt to hide it did make it seem somehow less worrisome. Vampires stalked by proudly, their faces gleaming in the electric light. Werewolves prowled the shadows in elegant evening dress. There was music coming from a string quartet standing on a raised cherrywood stage in the centre of the room. Cordelia glimpsed a handsome violin player with the gold-green eyes of a werewolf, and a clarinetist with auburn curls, his calves ending in the hard hooves of a goat. The walls were a deep blue, and massive gilt-framed paintings hung upon them, depicting scenes from mythology. At least Cordelia thought they were scenes from mythology. Usually when people were naked in paintings, she found, it was because the painter believed that the Greeks and Romans had no need or use for clothing, which Cordelia found puzzling, especially when the subjects were engaged in activities such as fighting minotaurs or wrestling serpents. Any shadow hunter knew that in battle, gear that covered your body was crucial.
"I simply cannot see why one would wish to picnic in the nude," Cordelia said. "There would be ants in dreadful places."
Anna laughed. "Cordelia, you are a breath of fresh air," she said, as a woman with dark hair bore down on them, carrying a silver salver. Her black hair was wrapped around an ivory comb hung about with silk peonies, and her embroidered gown was deep crimson. Glittering on the salver were crystal glasses filled with sparkling liquid.
"Champagne," she said,
and as she smiled, the glimmer of fang teeth appeared against her lower lip, a vampire.
"Thank you, Lily," said Anna, taking a glass.
Matthew did the same, and after a moment's hesitation, Cordelia followed. She had never had champagne, nor anything like it. According to her mother, ladies drank only sweet liquors like sherry and ratafia. Matthew downed his champagne in one swallow, placed the empty glass back on Lily's tray and took another. Cordelia lifted her glass as a dapper warlock with a ring of quills around his neck passed by, arm in arm with a blonde vampire in a garnet red frock. She was lovely and pale as new snow. Cordelia thought of the mundane women who paid to have their faces enamelled white to preserve their youth and keep their fashionable pallor. They ought to just become vampires, she thought. It would be less expensive. "What's that little smile of yours?" Matthew inquired. "You look as if you're about to laugh." Cordelia took a sip of champagne. It tasted like airy bubbles, and regarded him archly.
"What of it?"
"Most girls would be afraid," he said. "I mean, not Anna or Lucy, but most."
"I don't frighten easily," said Cordelia.
"I'm beginning to sense that." He glanced over at Anna and Lily. The vampire girl was laughing, her head close to Anna's. "Anna can seduce anyone," Matthew said to Cordelia in a low voice. "Anyone at all. It's her talent."
"Not my only talent, I hope," said Anna, looking up as Malcolm Fade reappeared. He gestured to Lily with a dismissive wave. Lily flounced off in a swirl of silk.
"Hypatia wishes to see you, Anna," said Malcolm. "She has a friend visiting from out of town who has requested to meet you." Anna gave a curling smile. "And this friend is visiting from where?"
"The seaside," said Malcolm. "Do come. You know how Hypatia gets."
Anna dropped a wink to Cordelia and Matthew and turned to follow Malcolm down a passageway papered with damask wallpaper. They were quickly out of view.
"She's so beautiful," said Cordelia. "Anna, I mean."
"Anna has a quality." Matthew raised a thoughtful eyebrow. "The French would call it jolie laide."
Cordelia knew French well enough to frown.
"Pretty ugly? She's not ugly."
"It doesn't mean that," Matthew said. "It means unusually pretty, oddly beautiful. It denotes having a face with character."
His gaze travelled from the top of her hair to the tips of her shoes.
"Like you have."
He reached out to snag a glass of champagne off a passing tray as the handsome werewolf from the string quartet went by with a smile. Somehow Matthew had drunk the one he had and discarded it with impressive speed and discretion. He took a swallow of the new one and met Cordelia's eyes over the rim. Cordelia was not entirely sure how she felt about being called pretty ugly, but there were more important issues at hand. She didn't know when she would be alone again with Matthew. She said,
"Do you remember how I asked you about your mother at the ball?"
"I always enjoy thinking about my mother at these sorts of parties," he said.
She took another swallow of champagne and tried to restrain a hiccup.
"Your mother is the consul," she continued.
"I had noticed that, yes."
"And she is currently in Idris, where they are preparing to try my father."
His eyes narrowed. "I thought..." He shook his head. A group of vampire ballerinas glanced over at them and giggled.
"Never mind. I think too much and I drink too much. That is always my problem."
"There is something I don't understand," said Cordelia. "Why haven't they tried my father with the mortal sword yet? Then they would have proof he's innocent."
Matthew looked faintly surprised. "Indeed, it makes little sense to possess a magical object that forces the holder to tell the truth
if you aren't going to use it in criminal trials. The word criminal still shook Cordelia to the bone.
We have very little information, but my brother does have school friends in Idris. He has heard they do not plan to use the mortal sword in the trial. Do you think you could convince your mother that they must?
Matthew had procured another drink, possibly from a potted plant. He was watching her over the rim of the glass. Cordelia wondered how many people had seen Matthew grinning over a drink and failed to spot him watching them with those dark green eyes. "You're very upset about this, aren't you?" he said.
"It is my family," she said. "If my father is found guilty, we will not just lose him. We will be as the Lightwoods were after Benedict's death. Everything will be stripped from us. Our name will be disgraced."
"Do you care that much about disgrace?"
"No," said Cordelia. "But my mother and brother do, and I do not know if they would survive."
Matthew set his glass down on a marquetry side table. "All right," he said. "I will write to my mother in Idris."
The relief was almost painful. "Thank you," said Cordelia. "But have her write back to Lucy, please, at the Institute. I don't want my mother to see the reply before I do, in case she says no."
Matthew frowned. "My mother would not..." He broke off, looking past her to where Lily waved from the other end of the room. "That is Anna's signal," he said. "We must go." Cordelia felt a slight thrill of unease.
"Go where?"
"Into the heart of it all," said Matthew, gesturing toward the damask-papered corridor Anna had disappeared down before. "Brace yourself. Warlocks can be as tricky as fairies if they set their minds to it." Curious, Cordelia followed Matthew down the hall. Paper lanterns lit the way. At the very end of the passage was a cabinet of carved ebony, an array of curios spread out under glass. Matthew gave the glass a playful tap. The cabinet swung inward. Within was a golden grotto. The whole room gleamed, from the painted ceiling to the floor where the carpet shone as if it were flaxen tissue paper. There were giltwood tables holding all manner of treasures, clockwork birds inlaid with lapis and gold, gauntlets and blades of delicate fairy workmanship, a polished wooden box decorated with the symbol of an Ouroboros, a serpent biting its own tail, and an apple carved from a single ruby. At the very end of the room was a four-poster bed the size of Cordelia's whole bedroom at home, inlaid with copper and brass, covered in dozens of cloth of gold cushions. Seated upon the edge of the bed, as if it were a throne, was a woman, a sleek warlock who seemed artfully shaped from enchanted materials, her skin mahogany, her hair bronze, her dress a shimmering gold. Cordelia hesitated upon the threshold. There were other people in the room besides the warlock woman, Malcolm Fade himself and Anna Lightwood, lounging alone on a conversation settee of walnut wood and gilt velvet, her long legs hooked over the slender wooden arms. Malcolm Fade smiled.
"Welcome, little shadow hunters. Few of your kind ever see the inner chamber of Hypatia Vex."
"Is she welcome, I wonder?" asked Hypatia with a cat-like smile. "Let her approach."
Cordelia and Matthew advanced together, Cordelia moving cautiously around the rococo chairs and tables, gleaming with gilt and pearls. Close up, the pupils of Hypatia Vex's eyes were the shape of stars, her warlock mark.
"I cannot say I care for the idea of so many Nephilim infesting my salon. Are you interesting, Cordelia Carstairs?"
Cordelia hesitated.
"If you have to think about it," said Hypatia, "then you're not."
"That hardly makes sense," said Cordelia. "Surely if you do not think, you cannot be interesting."
Hypatia blinked, creating the effect of stars turning off and on like lamps. Then she smiled.
"I suppose you may stay a moment."
"Good work, Cordelia,"
said Anna, swinging her legs off the edge of the settee. Arabella, how are the drinks coming on?
Cordelia turned to realize a fairy woman with tumbling blue and green hair was also in the room. She was standing in an alcove, partially hidden. Before her was a sideboard where she was mixing drinks. Her hands waved in midair like fronds in water, unstoppering decanters and crystal vials full of red liquid, and busily pouring them into a variety of goblets and flutes. Cordelia's eyes narrowed.
"Just ready, darling," Arabella said, and walked over to distribute drinks. Matthew accepted a drink with alacrity.
Cordelia noticed that Arabella walked with a rocking, unsteady gait, as if she were a sailor unaccustomed to treading on the land. When Arabella gave Anna her drink, Anna pulled Arabella into her lap. Arabella giggled, kicking up her French heels. Her legs were shockingly bare and covered in a faint iridescent pattern of scales. They flashed in the golden light like a rainbow. A mermaid. So this was Hypatia's friend from the seaside. They were a type of fairy rarely seen out of water, since their human legs caused them pain to walk on. Arabella noticed Cordelia's gaze and shrugged, shoulders moving fluidly beneath her heavy masses of blue and green hair.
"I have not been on land for many years. The last time I visited this ugly city, the Downworlders and Shadowhunters were trying to form the Accords. I was not much impressed with Nephilim then, and I have not been fond of Shadowhunters since. Still, exceptions can be made."
Before the Accords were formed, this woman had not been on the land for more than 30 years. Arabella leaned into Anna as she spoke, and Anna's scarred fingers drifted nimbly through the waves of the mermaid's hair. Tiny fish, small as sparks from a fire and bright blue, stirred when disturbed and leaped from strand to strand, chasing Anna's movements.
"My lovely, your hair is like a beautiful stream," murmured Anna, "because there are fish in it."
Apparently Anna could seduce multiple people in one evening. Arabella blushed and bounced up to gather more drinks from the sideboard.
"We know why Anna brought you, Matthew," said Malcolm. "You are amusing. But is there a reason this young Carstairs girl is accompanying you tonight?"
"Because we need your help," said Cordelia.
Everyone in the room laughed. Malcolm smiled and raised his empty glass to Cordelia as if she had made a particularly good joke. Arabella was still at the sideboard, sprinkling flowers into two flutes of wine and humming. Anna and Matthew looked pained.
"Magnus Bane would help them,"
said Hypatia, the stars in her eyes sparkling.
"That is why they have come.
Magnus has made them believe a warlock will always help them."
"Magnus is not here," said Malcolm. His gaze was distant. "I bear you no ill will, child, but I loved a shadow hunter once, and it brought me only sorrow."
"She became an iron sister and broke his heart," said Hypatia.
"Oh," said Cordelia, surprised. The iron sisters were even more secretive than the silent brothers. Stern and removed, they shaped Adamus into runed weapons for the Nephilim from their hidden fortress. They had done so for 1,000 years. Like the Silent Brothers, they did not marry and held the responsibility of placing protective spells on Shadowhunter babies when they were born. No one not of their sisterhood was allowed in the Adamant Citadel. Only women could choose to be Iron Sisters, though it seemed as lonely to Cordelia as Silent Brotherhood.
"That seems very sad."
"Indeed," said Malcolm. "Our kind and yours are best apart, whatever Bane might say."
"I have not met Bane," said Hypatia, tapping her golden fingernails together. "Before he last left London, he helped the Nephilim, but they do not recall his graciousness, or do they only expect help at the first sign of trouble? I let you come to my salon because you amuse me, Matthew Fairchild, because you are a child, a silly,
and beautiful child, who touches the fire because it is lovely and forgets that it will burn him. Do not presume that means you can ask for favours.
It might be amusing for you to find out what it is they want, suggested Anna.
As if you don't already know, said Hypatia, but the look she gave Anna was a fond one, and Anna smiled.
What if we did something for you? Cordelia said.
Arabella was making the rounds, setting her flower-bedecked drinks in front of the warlocks. Malcolm lifted his and eyed it as if he were hoping to find solace at the bottom. Hastily, Cordelia said,
What if I saved your lives?
This time they didn't laugh. They simply stared.
Charming, Hypatia said, but we are not in any danger.
I disagree, said Cordelia.
She drew Cortana. Every glittering light in the room caught fire along the blade. Cordelia struck Hypatia's crystal flute with a sweep of her blade. The flute exploded, sending glass and wine in all directions. Arabella gave an indignant scream, and Cordelia swung the sword to point directly at her.
It's a pity, Cordelia said. I've never met a mermaid before. I wish you hadn't turned out to be a poisoner.
Matthew, who had already drained his glass, set it down on the table with a loud thump.
Poison?
Only for the warlocks, said Cordelia. It was them she was trying to kill.
Hypatia sounded outraged.
May I ask where you came to this wild conclusion?
My mother knows a great deal about medicinal plants, and she shared her knowledge with me, said Cordelia. There is a plant cultivated by the mermaids, an underwater variety of deadly nightshade, which they will not sell even at the shadow markets. One taste is death. I saw her sprinkle those blossoms in your cups.
Malcolm Fade waved a hand over his own cup. Purple sparks woke and danced in his glass. The red wine stain on the carpet unfurled like a flower and turned to purple smoke. Hypatia looked at the broken flute as if it had turned into a rat.
I was a child in Cornwall long ago, where a tropa belladonna grows wild, said Malcolm quietly. I am an expert in the uses of deadly nightshade, and I have seen its cousin, deadly nightsea, before. Miss Carstairs is right. She has saved our lives.
Seize the mermaid, Hypatia said between her teeth.
Anna was already up and out of her chair, dagger in hand, her movements light as a cat's. Arabella was fumbling in her bodice, her teeth bared, but Anna caught at her wrist, twisting it hard. An item fell from Arabella's fingers and rolled upon the golden carpet. It was the horn of a sea creature, sharpened to a deadly point.
Let me end my life, Arabella hissed, writhing, but Anna continued to hold her prisoner with an arm about her neck.
Runes flared along Anna's bare, slender arm. The dagger in her other hand glimmered like diamonds.
Let me die with honour as sea people do.
Honour? There is no honour in poison. It is a coward's trick, said Hypatia. You intended to poison me and Malcolm Fade. And to what end? What power do you seek?
She seeks revenge, said Malcolm. I have heard of you, Arabella. You considered yourself insulted by the Nephilim years ago. It must have been a much greater matter than any of us realized, for when Hypatia told you that they were here tonight, you sought to pay them back. His eyes narrowed. Hypatia and I would have been dead. Warlocks poisoned by shadow hunters, you would claim. Every downworlder in London would have been after Nephilim blood.
Her face like stone, Hypatia picked up a small golden bell and shook it. The ringing echoed through the room. A blue-skinned fairy girl with foxgloves in her hair popped her head in through the door.
You rang, mistress?
Hypatia's mouth was a tight line.
Hyacinth, have the guards take this mermaid away and put her in the wine cellar.
Please reconsider putting a poisoner in the wine cellar, said Matthew. I beg of you, for the sake of my future visits.
Hypatia waved a hand. Put her in the whispering room, then. She shouldn't be able to cause any trouble there. We'll take her to the spiral labyrinth shortly.
And then, said Cordelia, as two trolls wearing coats with gold braid entered, detached Arabella from Anna's grip and escorted the hissing mermaid out of the room.
What happens to her?
A trial, said Hypatia, a downworlder matter of no interest to you. It will be fair. Downworlders are always fair.
Then you should have little issue with offering Cordelia assistance, said Anna, brushing dust from her cuffs, as she saved your life. Anna is right, said Malcolm. A debt is a debt. What is it you wish for help with, Nephilim?
Cordelia let Matthew tell the tale. The picnic, James's vision of the Shadow Realm, the demons who came in daylight, the wounded Shadow Hunters, and the poison the Silent Brothers could not cure.
Your friend saw a Shadowland nobody else can see, said Hypatia. Is he the child of the shape-changing warlock girl, and the Shadow Hunter mad enough to marry her? I knew that would be trouble.
Matthew looked furious. Cordelia said, He can indeed see what others cannot. It is a rare talent.
So this is a kind of demon that comes in daylight, said Malcolm, and transmits a poison your scholars have never seen before. If such demons were free in London, it would not be good for anyone, said Anna.
Of course, all demons come from other worlds, said Hypatia. But if you think that as the children of demons we are intimately familiar with their geography and those who dwell in them, you are quite mistaken.
We are not insulting you, Miss Vex, said Cordelia, but you have your ear to the ground of Downworld. Nothing happens in it that you do not know. If there was other word of these strange demons.
There is not, Hypatia said firmly. All discussion has been about the lack of demons in London, in fact, and how strange it is.
Ragnar called it the calm before the storm, but he is a doomsayer at the best of times, said Malcolm. Well, they seem to be returning, said Anna. A cluster of Shaxx demons appeared in Seven Dials just the other day. And Dumas demons were encountered in the city, Matthew added. Nasty, messy sorts of creatures.
Hypatia and Malcolm exchanged a look. Demons were everyone's problem, downworlders and shadow hunters alike. A single attack against shadow hunters by unknown creatures was one thing, but Shaxx and Dumas demons were indiscriminate killers.
There was a rumour, said Malcolm, though it was only a rumour, mind, that some sort of powerful individual, a warlock perhaps, put out the word among the demon groups that London was to be avoided. Since when have demons ever listened to anyone? Inquired Anna.
Malcolm shrugged.
As I said, a rumour. Besides, in such a situation, it seems wise to leave well enough alone.
The time for leaving well enough alone has passed, said Cordelia. These sunlight demons may be a harbinger of worse to come for us all. Surely we should work together to discover if that is the case.
I detest it when shadow hunters make sense, Hypatia sighed. Ragnar Fell is back in London, and he has often worked with shadow hunters in the past. He knows a great deal about demon worlds, having made himself a student of dimensional magic. If there is a dimension that breeds demons who can withstand sunlight, he would know about it.
It does seem a place to start. How do we find him? Said Matthew.
I will send him an urgent message, said Hypatia. He will contact you.
She sank back into her chair.
Now go, she said, closing her starry eyes. I find myself weary of angels.
There seemed little else to say. Matthew, Anna, and Cordelia made their way back through the main room of the salon, where a vampire was reciting poetry about blood. In moments they had reached Berwick Street and the outside world.
Cordelia inhaled lungfuls of cool night air. It tasted of dirt and city.
Nephilim!
It was the blue-skinned fairy girl Hypatia had called Hyacinth. She looked around at the city in distaste before handing Matthew a velvet-wrapped bundle.
Fade wished you to have this, she said. He is grateful for what you all did. What did you do? She added curiously. I've never heard of a warlock being grateful before.
Anna winked at her. I'll tell you the story in a moment. Cordelia and Matthew looked at Anna in surprise. Hyacinth blushed and giggled her way back down the alley.
I'm going to linger a bit longer, Anna said with a cat-like stretch. You two can take the carriage. I'll make my own way home.
Matthew pulled back a corner of the velvet. Folded gently within were perhaps a half dozen blades of fine and careful fairy workmanship. Matthew whistled. A real gift. He looked at Cordelia with admiration, his bronze hair gleaming in the naphtha light.
I would never have guessed Arabella was engaged in poisoning. I told you earlier, said Anna, gesturing for the carriage. I never do court dull girls.